The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Rice, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Rice, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Booker Tov Howard, good, thank you. How are you guys doing?
Yes, excellent, thank you.
I'm not sure about the Indian fusion. I'm sort of hearing more Greek kind of influence.
Well, that's definitely Greek because it's Yasu, so it's definitely got
Yasu, yeah. But not necessarily one of my favorite ones. certainly, I mean, that's not the only one with the Greek influence. There's a lot of Greek influence, and actually, quite interestingly, quite a lot of Greek artists are quite popular in Israel. So there is certainly some affinity with Greek music.
And I guess that whole Mediterranean vibe.
Probably. I don't know if it extends to India, though. I'm still trying to work that one out.
Yeah, I hear that. All right. Let's talk about the violence that broke out yesterday during a protest by Ethiopian Israelis against police brutality.
Yeah, so this was a very unfortunate incident. I mean, on the one hand, the protest... Had been planned already for some time before. We knew that Ethiopian Israelis were feeling quite badly done by on a number of accounts, and they were planning this protest. It seems as if, though, in Israel, if you really want to get your voice heard, if you really want to make people feel the presence of your protest, then you have to close the Ayalon Highway, and preferably at rush hour. So that's exactly what happened yesterday when the protest was in the area of the Azrieli Center, for people who know the area, and went onto the Ayalon Highway. And in fact, the highway was closed in both directions at one point during the evening rush hour, which didn't necessarily make people, even though it brought people's attention to their protest, it didn't necessarily bring a lot of support for their protest when people are trying to get home at that time. The protest then went on also to Rabin Square. There was violence. There were policemen who were injured. There were protesters who were injured. So it all became a little unfortunate in the end. We do wish to give people the right to protest, to make their voices heard. We don't want people to become violent. So that's not okay. But really, this whole issue, the straw which broke the camel's back, I guess, was the incident that took place earlier this month, when one of the members of the Ethiopian Israeli community was actually shot and killed by a police officer when he rushed at the police officer with a knife. Now, on the one hand, we can understand that the police officer reacted in the way that he did, because there was clearly a threat to his life by somebody rushing towards him with a knife. The Ethiopian Israeli community are claiming that the police reaction was unjustified, was too much, and that this man should never have been killed. Apparently, they claim that he had been suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, and you know that he really wasn't the risk to the life of the policeman that was assessed at that moment in time. But I don't blame the policeman for taking that decision in the spur of the moment. At that particular moment when that happens, one doesn't know who this person is and what their intentions are, and when you see someone rushing at you with a knife, then I suppose you know you're justified to take the decision that you take in the spur of the moment. But the problem is that the Ethiopian community claim that this is just one particular incident in a whole series of incidents where they feel that the police have been cracking down, have been mistreating the Ethiopian community more than is justified. And I think that this is an interesting discussion to have, because while, you know, we are very proud of the success of many of the members of our Ethiopian community, and I have to tell you that there's nothing that gives me more nachas and pleasure than when I see a member of our Ethiopian community really rising to the top of Israeli society, becoming ambassadors on behalf of the State of Israel, becoming members of Knesset, leading businesses, leading activities in the social community. There's nothing that gives me more pride than that, because I know where these people have come from. They've come from really very little education. Their family backgrounds are very basic and very simple, and yet they have risen to the top of Israeli society and really made successes of themselves. When I see the soldiers in their uniforms, when I see officers from the Israeli-Ethiopian community. I really get a lot of pleasure because it's not something that we take for granted, and I think that there's a lot of credit that needs to be given to those individuals who've really made good here and have really managed to achieve a lot of things. The problem is, unfortunately, that from a social point of view, there have been many, many issues in the Ethiopian community because of the background that they come from, because of the family that they've been accustomed to, because of the male dominance in the Ethiopian style of living in where they've come from in Ethiopia. And when that particular status is taken away from the male in the family, that has led to many, many issues. It's led to alcohol abuse and substance abuse. It's led to violence within the families. It's led to a lot of issues. And it's led to petty crime. And so the Ethiopian community feel that this petty crime, which has been prevalent in many areas of the Ethiopian community, has given them a bad name, and the police therefore have some sort of a predisposed prejudgment against them and in the way in which they're treated. So really, this was what that protest was all about yesterday.
And let's hope it settles and that grievances can be addressed. Palestinian Authority Prime Minister Rami Hamdallah submitted his resignation and that of his cabinet to Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. What does this mean now for the PA?
Well, this is an interesting move because Rami Hamdallah was appointed a few years ago following the agreement between Fatah and Hamas. And as a result of that agreement, one of the agreements, which was entered into many years ago, unfortunately, these agreements between those two factions have never really come to anything in particular. But on that particular occasion, the agreement led to the appointment of Rami Hamdallah as the Prime Minister. This was back in 2014, in fact. Mm. So it's been this government's been in place already for more than 4 years. And as a result of that agreement between those two factions, this government was appointed. And so Rami Hamdallah's government effectively represented something of a cooperation between Hamas and Fatah, even though he himself comes from Fatah. And of course, the Palestinian Authority is ruled by Mahmoud Abbas, who is, of course, a member of Fatah. So while it was a very Fatah-orientated government, it did somehow encompass and encapsulate that agreement between Fatah and Hamas. Now, with his submission of his resignation, one can interpret this to mean that all of that really has fallen away, and whatever agreements have been entered into over the years, especially that one back in 2014, is effectively null and void now as a result of this government falling over. The interesting thing for me is that it's not clear whether Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has actually accepted the resignation. We don't see in the press whether he's accepted it and said it's okay and he will appoint another government. There have been calls for an election, not for the first time. Of course, elections haven't been held for many, many years in the Palestinian Authority area, and it's interesting that Rami Hamdallah himself, when he resigned, called for elections to be held in order to replace his government. That's very unlikely to happen at the moment. So it seems as if, though, we have a situation where Mahmoud Abbas, even though he's been a very dominant figure in ruling over the Palestinian Authority up until now, but of course he's had to delegate a lot of that authority to this government and to Prime Minister Hamdallah. Now, of course, the Prime Minister said he doesn't want to serve anymore for whatever reasons, and it's not exactly clear what the political pressures were behind the scenes that caused him to submit his resignation. But clearly, this whole cooperation between Hamas and Fatah seems to be falling over more and more. And now it's back to the hands of President Mahmoud Abbas for him to decide what he's going to do next. But essentially, I'm expecting that he will probably want to appoint a new prime minister who will form a new government. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out and how that affects particularly the relationship between Hamas and Fatah, and how that in turn translates into an impact on the relationship with Israel.
What's interesting is that Abbas is still not talking about moving along. I mean, he is talking about moving along. He has spoken about that for ages, but there doesn't seem any real sign of it, is there?
There's no sign. And in fact, we were just talking yesterday about a lack of succession plan in relation to Prime Minister Netanyahu in the Likud party. And one could almost say the same about Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas within Fatah and within the Palestinian Authority in general. And there are certainly people behind the scenes who've been militating for him to step down. Interestingly, the person who is most touted to succeed him is, of course, sitting in the Israeli prison right now. And there are suggestions that if Fatah, the political party Fatah, were to hold elections, then they would appoint, the election would effectively elect a leader who's in an Israeli jail right now. So that would be an interesting exercise to see how that pans out. But be that as it may, there seems to be no sign of an election in the near future. Abbas's health seems to be still very much under the spotlight. He's known to be a very heavy smoker. He's suffered with all kinds of health issues. He's a man in his 80s already. And there's no sign of him moving on. You're absolutely right.
Fascinating. Absolutely, absolutely fascinating. Former IDF Chief of Staff Benny Gantz finally held a formal launch of his new party ahead of the April elections.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about this yesterday, and what's interesting about the whole Benny Gantz story is that there was an opinion poll that some opinion polls that went out as, in the wake of the launch of his party, and those opinion polls for me are very fascinating. The first opinion poll, the question was, do you think that Gantz is a right winger? Do you think he is a left winger, or do you not know? And just the fact that they're actually asking those questions is an indication that this is just a very unclear thing. The fact is that Benny Gantz has certainly gained a lot of attention and momentum at the moment, and the polls are suggesting that he would probably win around 21 seats if the election was held today, as opposed to the Likud, who would win around 30 seats. So Gantz has gone from zero to absolute hero in almost no time at all, by coming in with more seats than, for example, Yair Lapid's Yesh Atid party or Naftali Bennett and Ayala Shaked's new right party that would win only 7 seats, apparently. So this has come from really nowhere to be what is now considered to be quite a significant political force on the political horizon, and yet nobody really knows where on the political spectrum he falls. It's very, very confusing indeed. You know, the opinion polls where people have said, what do you think he is, have shown that it's kind of split. Some people think he's here, some people think he's there.
But I wonder if that's bad. I mean, is that, you know, maybe that's the way in which it needs to be. Why do we need to define somebody and make them curtail their view according to this right-wing, left-wing construct? It's actually...
But isn't it a little weird that people are voting for them to go into Knesset without really understanding what their platform is? Isn't that a little weird?
No, I don't think it's weird at all, actually. Because I think if we can look at him and say, look, his policy on this is maybe a little left, a policy on that is a bit right, and a policy on that is a bit centre, but actually that works for me, then I'll vote for him, rather than saying, well, he's more right of centre, that means he's got to fit into that box which we've defined. Rather than looking at the issue, we're looking at this construct. I happen to think quite the opposite. I think, and I'm not knowledgeable enough about his particular policies, so I'm not even referring to him. I'm saying I think it's quite a good thing that we actually look at the detail of what he stands for, and not just where we assume he'll think on a certain political issue because he's left of center, for example.
I think that's an interesting way of looking at things, and I've said before that I think most Israelis have a very strong right-wing side to them and have a very strong left-wing side to them, the right-wing side being the security angle and the left-wing side being social policy issues, where, you know, most Israelis are very, very left-leaning when it comes to social policies and social justice issues. I think people really believe very strongly in all of that, and yet we have this dilemma about how to deal with the security situation, which makes people seem like right-wingers. So Benny Gantz, certainly as a former chief of general staff, comes with credentials in terms of dealing with security issues. People, you know, remember him as the chief of general staff during Tsuk Eitan, during Operation Protective Edge, and they think that, therefore, he would be tough on security as a result of that. I'm not 100% convinced that that's a logical conclusion necessarily, but be that as it may, that's the way that people think. So so he doesn't really have to talk much about that, and he hasn't really spoken about his platform and his views in general. It just seems as if though he's come out and just launched himself as a potential prime ministerial candidate, and people are believing it because the opinion poll yesterday showed that there are an equal number of Israelis, 42% of the population, support Prime Minister Netanyahu to become the next prime minister, and 42% support Benny Gantz to be the next prime minister.
Amazing.
Very, very fascinating.
It is indeed. That's where we have to leave it. It is Thursday, which means we wish you a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll be back with you Monday morning.